Well, Bendigo is known as, I'm not sure how widely, but we know it as the city in the forest.
Roslyn Park is Bendigo's oasis.
Rosalind Park is a popular spot in Bendigo, but yesterday afternoon its tranquil atmosphere was shattered. A 4-ton branch fell from a large tree in the park, crushing a 4-year-old girl and her mother who were taking a walk.
I'm absolutely devastated.
Oh, my heart sank. You think to yourself, yeah, but for the grace of God, go, oh, you know, I've got a 5-year-old son.
I think the paranoia following that event was a bit extreme, and I take it back to a disconnection with nature.
Hello, I'm Anne Jones, and welcome to Off Track, coming to you this week from Central Victoria. On Monday the 30th of December 2013, a horrible accident happened in Bendigo. A mother and her child were walking in a park. There was a crack, and a branch fell, pinning the 31-year-old woman to the ground. The child, a 4-year-old girl, was killed. There was a public outpouring of grief from the community after the accident, and understandably, the family chose to retain their privacy. And the community has been very protective of the family, at the same time as publicly rallying funds and support. And none of that's very surprising for a regional community. But what was surprising was the backlash against large trees. The community's reaction highlights the tension that many of us face here in Australia. The desire to live enveloped by nature, but to avoid the dangers associated with the wild. The challenges with trees in Bendigo are not unique. Every council in Australia has the same risks and benefits to balance. But still, the backlash in Bendigo was a bit odd, because the city and its trees have always had a special relationship.
Bendigo probably has a significant connection to trees because it was once a treeless landscape.
Mitch Kemp is a private arborist with over 25 years' experience, and he's a long-term Bendigo resident.
In the midst of the mining boom through the 1850s, 1860s and into the early 1870s, it was absolutely treeless. There are images of Bendigo in those days, and it was a desolate place, that's for sure. Bendigo's a bit unique in that a lot of the original streetscapes for the inner urban area of Bendigo was laid out by Baron von Mueller, and he was very keen to try out a lot of Australian natives, as well as bring a lot of the European exotics to Victoria as well, to make, you know, the European settlers to feel a bit more comfortable and a bit more at home. Von Mueller commenced the planting of street trees, or encouraged the council to commence street tree planting in the 1870s. I think 1873 was about when the first lot of street trees went in. I marvel at how remarkable the outcome was, given that, you know, there was no reticulated water at the time. The town was a bit lawless at the time too, so there was probably equally a reasonable amount of vandalism at the time too, just as there is now. And yet you'll more consistently see a species of trees that have been successful that are all around about the same age from those earlier plantings than you will from perhaps the later plantings.
What do you put that down to?
The fact that people really recognised how important trees were once they were gone. That's what it tells me. It would have been a fairly inhospitable place to live outside of the work environment of Bendigo. If you were trying to get set up a family here and encourage, you know, your wife to come and move up here and all that sort of thing, it wouldn't have been a very attractive idea in comparison to living elsewhere around even some of the suburbs of Melbourne, which by that stage had already been well established.
Well, Bendigo is known as, I'm not sure how widely, but we know it as the city in the forest, and it is an extremely appropriate analysis of Bendigo.
Darren Fuzzard is the Director of Presentation and Assets with the City of Greater Bendigo Council.
Wherever you go in Bendigo, there is a substantial amount of greenery, and we think that is one of the things that Bendigo people and visitors absolutely love. The presentation of the city is the thing that we hear almost the most about from the public, both visitors and locals, is that they love the presentation of the city and they want us to maintain it.
In fact, Brad Cream, the curator of the Bendigo Botanic Gardens, moved to town because of the trees.
Yes, I thought we'd go and have a look at the Pinus toriana. It's a really interesting tree. I think one of the better trees in the garden. It's probably from around the 1860s, I think. It's a really rare tree. There's probably only a couple of thousand left in the world, and it's from a couple of islands near California. I think this one's unique because of its size, its form, its rarity, the fact that it's growing in Bendigo, it's not its natural conditions. It's just a sensationally big and beautiful tree, and it provides a lot of functions. It not only provides shade for people to sit under, provides habitat for animals, provides value to our conservation efforts to house genetic material across the world, not just our local flora. It's just a ripper, basically.
Now, when you say it's a pinus, people will probably think Christmas tree, and it isn't like that at all. It's a completely different shape. How would you describe it?
It's a very upright tree. It's got a lot of angular branches that come off at 45 degrees, and it's got a fairly symmetrical canopy. Some of the older trees, especially fighting for a bit of sunlight, can be on a bit of an angle, and that can cause some long-term problems as well. So it's got a really good form. Probably why it's one of the ones that has hung on through the drought, through the whole history of the site.
Just to give an idea of the size, it's at least 1.3 metres across the base, you'd say, wouldn't you?
That's right. You'd need probably three people around the tree holding hands to get around the diameter of this trunk. So it's you see people giving these old trees a hug as well. It's it's funny to watch.
Ros Woodburn, landscape architect. I grew up under the gum trees in Eltham, just out of Melbourne, Mudbrick House. Always had an affinity with the bush. I did some outdoor education and then landscape architecture because I believe as a society we need to live with nature.
How long have you been in Bendigo?
Been in Bendigo just 10 years.
And how would you describe the environment here?
Extremely dry, but an amazingly resilient landscape. Having seen and learnt the history of the landscape and how few mature trees have been left, I think it's a landscape where you have to worship the trees that are here, because otherwise it's just you get burnt to a crisp. It's hot.
So how would you describe the tree coverage in the town in Bendigo?
I think Roslyn Park is a standout. And my dad grew up in the Western District of Victoria. And as a child, he would come and stay at the Shamrock Hotel. He knows Roslyn Park.
Roslyn Park is Bendigo's oasis. It's Bendigo can get very hot and dry, and in the summertime in particular. It is just, a fabulous, cool, shady retreat. It's the jewel in the crown for Bendigo. Most of the trees that are in Roslyn Park, as I say, date back to the 1870s. That's pretty significant.
Roslyn Park is a popular spot in Bendigo, but yesterday afternoon its tranquil atmosphere was shattered. A 4-ton branch fell from a large tree in the park, crushing a 4-year-old girl and her mother who were taking a walk.
I'm absolutely devastated by this.
Terrible tragedy, Fiona, and it's rocked our entire community.
This space being such a public space as well, that it really does hit home, doesn't it?
I suppose during the holiday season it makes it more, hits home more.
It does hit home, but there's thousands of trees in the park. The very large eucalyptus tree limb in question.
The tree in question was inspected in September and no fault found. The council today decided to chop it down. And it says residents can be assured the city's parks are safe.
We're well known in Bendigo for our beautiful parks, and there shouldn't be any concern in the community. Our trees are inspected on a regular basis, and incidents of this nature are extremely rare.
In the meantime, New Year's Eve fireworks scheduled in the park have been cancelled as a mark of respect.
What was your reaction when you heard?
Oh, my heart sank. You think to yourself, yeah, but for the grace of God, I've got a 5-year-old son. We've got large red gums out the front of our place, which shed the odd branch. You would be extremely unlucky to be under a branch when it's shed in that circumstance, particularly in a location, where people aren't there 24/7. My heart goes out.
And what about as a professional, as somebody who's worked in this industry and and knows all of the arborists in town, I imagine.
Yeah, look, that's difficult too, in the sense that you'll always second-guess yourself, particularly when you're, you know, trying to make a determination on a tree that's not entirely clear what the, you know, what the safety of that tree may be. There are times, there are grey areas where we, you know, have to make a judgment call. And obviously in circumstances where there's a lot more activity, particularly from, you know, pedestrians, or say it's a school playground or something like that, you just can't really afford to take too many chances.
What was the public reaction?
Oh, there was a certainly an outpouring of grief in Bendigo over that incident. But you know, some circumstances just aren't foreseeable. And when you include nature or an aspect of the natural environment in what we do, it can never be made absolutely risk-free.
Following that, of course, it's very sad to lose a life. And since then, I've heard arborists are being called left, right and centre to chop down trees. Parents of young children just paranoid about the trees in their backyard. And I think it's similar to shark attacks. We are part and live with nature. We are part of nature, and these things happen. I mean, you got more chance of being hit by a car, which is human-made, than being knocked down by a tree. So I think the paranoia following that event was a bit extreme, and I take it back to a disconnection with nature.
Oh, look, I want to say that the Jarjarburung Clans Aboriginal Corporation, our heart goes out to the family of the girl that was concerned, and it must have been a real ordeal that they went through.
Graham Atkinson is the chairperson of the Jarjarburung Clans Aboriginal Corporation. As well as being the custodians of the land, they've recently moved into environmental management themselves.
The trees are a natural feature of Jarjarburung country, of the landscape. We're not suggesting that you should go out and put a box around or a cage around every tree. But we need to be mindful of the risks involved, particularly in those areas where there are high visitations.
There's this been this knee-jerk reaction that's happened, where people think that chopping down trees is the answer to mitigate the risk. Is it the answer?
Look, I think there's an analogy that can be drawn here with the incidents of the shark attacks that I think occurred in Western Australia. There was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction there, and whilst it was a tragic incident, I don't think we're suggesting here that we should go out and cull all the trees like they were proposing to do in Western Australia in regard to the shark attack.
The hearsay was a bit of paranoia, but that's what came through the media to me. I haven't seen evidence of trees getting chopped willy-nilly because of this paranoia. So maybe there is a more balanced view out there, and it was only what hit the paper, and that people aren't really up in arms and we should chop down those trees because it's dangerous to live with them. I'm hoping, anyway.
Ros Woodburn there, a landscape architect from Bendigo. So was it paranoia, beaten up by the local media after the accident, or was there a genuine concern from the community about their once-loved large trees? The council has provided me with their latest figures. Over 900 people have contacted the council since the start of January requesting work, inspection or removal of large trees. That's an unprecedented amount of inquiries about vegetation. Darren Fuzzard.
There was certainly a significant number of people who, as a result of that horrible tragedy, feeling very uncomfortable about the trees in their neighbourhoods and in their parks, and we saw a significant amount of requests from the community as a direct result shortly after the incident happened. I think there's certainly been a strong wariness about whether or not the trees are what people are calling safe or not. And that's been a question we've been asked many times. Can you guarantee me that the trees are safe? And the only advice that we can give to people is we can't give you that guarantee that trees are safe in the sense that they will never drop limbs. It is something that trees do naturally. Healthy trees drop limbs from time to time, and it's not something that we can guarantee people will change. What we can guarantee them is that we will continue to have a very strong maintenance inspection program, as well as continue to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars each year on treating defects in trees that are identified through that process, as well as keeping the trees in the best possible health that we can.
And we probably should mention that City of Greater Bendigo is responsible for over 100,000 individual trees, and that is our street trees, or that is our park trees as well.
Simon Harrison also works for the council. He looks after the parks and natural reserves.
Trees are a very passionate area, and quite often you will find that trees can polarise people, and they can certainly be at opposite ends of the spectrum. People that are very, very keen to retain and keep their trees, and other people that do not want the tree for a multitude of reasons. The matter of a tree failure or tree management is not a challenge that's unique to the City of Greater Bendigo. It's a challenge everywhere. Increased urbanisation and increased demand for the use of our assets puts lots of challenges on parks, open space, trees and subsequent assets. I think in regards to the emotional response, that's to be expected. We work in a society that people do like to point fingers. The days are of sometimes, you know, act of God or, you know, nature are gone. And it's probably, in all honesty, it's about a 1 in over 5 million chance of this occurring.
1 in 5 million chance is no comfort to a grieving family. Or it seems, to many of the people in the community of Bendigo in central Victoria. You're listening to Off Track. My name's Anne Jones. And today we're in Bendigo, where only a couple of months ago, a horrible accident happened. While taking an afternoon walk in the most iconic park in the centre of town, a branch fell from a tree and killed a tiny girl. The reaction to the death in Bendigo was immense, as the paper ran stories of grieving. The council received about 900 requests to lop, remove, or at least assess large trees. Private arborists have also been overwhelmed with business, and the event has raised awareness about trees and the stresses that they face. Simon Harrison from the Bendigo Council explains.
Ongoing dry and warm conditions can result in significant stress to a tree, and therefore result in its decline in its condition and its health. General damage and use and compaction and things of the like that happen in our parks and open space, you know, that's certainly a contributing factor. And also age. You know, trees senesce, and that is a reference to the tree getting old, and like us as humans, they have a lifespan and certainly a finite one.
Urban trees are doing their best to endure drought and high temperature, compaction and vandalism, and even influences like rising salinity. I asked Mitch Kemp, the arborist, how trees respond to stress.
Some species, like these planes have done, will start to thin their canopy out so that the demand on the root zone from moisture being evaporated through the canopy isn't as great. They you know, might use that as a defence mechanism to minimise the amount of moisture lost through the canopy, and you know, that has to be replaced by the root zone or the tree will die. In the cases of some eucalypts, though, as we know, it would appear that their defence system is to jettison the odd branch and drop often large branches in the case of some species like red gums. Unfortunately, that's one aspect of arboriculture that is not predictable. It's very difficult to determine whether, you know, that warm, hot weather limb shed or warm weather limb shed or warm season limb shed, it's hard to predict, you know, if a tree is going to drop a branch or, in fact, which branch it's going to drop. It might be something that we discover more about over time, and I hope it is something that we can have more of a influence over into the future. It probably just highlights the fact that you know, people tend to have a need to control their environment, and when you're trying to combine part of the natural environment with the residential environment or the urban environment, it still can't be made entirely risk-free. Any tree that's growing in an urban environment is most likely compromised to some extent in terms of the type of environment it's growing in, as opposed to its natural environment, which, you know, ordinarily would be most likely a forest environment. So, you know, you're not going to have deep beds of leaf litter and you know, highly fertile, friable soils for the most part.
Meanwhile, over at the Bendigo Botanic Gardens, Brad Cream is reflecting on how to best protect his tree collection.
I think it's always an ongoing battle to throw as much resources at something as we would like. We've got so many demands on our resources, on our staff and on the money, obviously. And we think we're doing a pretty good job of managing our trees. We try and reduce the risk to public safety and to risk of damage to our assets as much as possible. And you could always argue, well, what if I spent double that money? Could I do the job better? And maybe we could. So we've got a lot of different things to manage and improve on, like anyone.
Bendigo is in a very fortunate position of having experienced long-term sizable growth. We are growing as fast or faster than all other regional places in Victoria. And because of that, Bendigo is expanding. We can't fit into just the areas that are currently developed. We are also spilling out into new areas, and with that comes new landscape, new trees, new responsibilities. So that demand is growing.
Does that mean that in the future we may see more budget having to be allocated to keeping this as a green-treed city?
We would expect so. It's certainly something that you can't have additional growth and maintain existing standards. Something has to give. I think there's a really strong amount of support at a council level and community level for us to keep those standards high, because it is what Bendigo values.
In Mark Street, close to the centre of town, the residents have fought for many years and probably decades to protect their plane trees. I've been told that if anyone starts a chainsaw within 200 metres of the street, the residents emerge from their houses in various states of undress to protect their assets. And I'd believe it too, because as I was standing outside in the street with a small microphone interviewing Mitch Kemp, the residents were finding excuses to come outside and make sure we weren't planning on doing anything to the trees. Gee, you can tell it's dry at the moment, can't you? Look at the ground. It's dusty, isn't it? And even the nature strips, which are clearly meant to be lawn at the moment, are just frazzled brown grass.
They are. And in fact, if you consider how this streetscape would look at this time of year without the trees, you know, it wouldn't be a pretty sight. But with the trees in place, you can just see that the streetscape and the aesthetic of this street is absolutely glorious as a result.
What effect does, say, in this particular case, it's a very short little street filled with these beautiful large plane trees. Does the fact the trees here make the properties worth more?
Oh, I think beyond a shadow of a doubt that's the case, yes. I think that's been proven again and again over many decades and many different municipalities. It's the leafy suburbs that are more sought after by residents, and as a consequence the property values go up.
10 years from now, the Bendigo landscape, I would love to see more of these tree-lined roads, because the trees are about human health.
Given the reaction from people following the accident that occurred, do you think that that vision is possible?
We've got a big gap in the generation that's coming through and their parents of respect for nature. I think it's going to be, yes, challenging, because the loudest voices now are more interested in having Wi-Fi free throughout the city. Somehow we've got to convince them, well, you can sit and listen to your Wi-Fi for free, but under a shady tree would be really nice.
What do you think Bendigo would be like if it didn't have all of these large, older trees?
I think it would be a dust bowl. It'd be a horrible place to live if you had no trees. It would be like desertification, which is affecting a lot of parts around the world. You know, it's, for me, it's about creating life, and you know, you plant plants and that brings in the animals, and you, when you've got plants and animals, that brings in the people, and then you know, that brings in the buzz of activity around a garden, and it's sort of it's creating a space for us to live, that a space that we want to live in.
So when we are thinking about what's the right response to something as awful as that horrible tragedy, that's the thing that we have to have in mind, is that we, our response is balanced with what we all hold dearly about Bendigo, because it is a very green city. 98,000 trees in public areas that we actively manage. That's a significant amount of trees that contribute to the way this city looks and feels.
Darren Fuzzard there, finishing this week's Off Track from Bendigo, where concern about trees developed in the town after an accident left a small child dead. The Victorian coroner is currently investigating the case. You also heard the voices of Graham Atkinson, Brad Cream, Simon Harrison, Roz Woodburn and Mitch Kemp. I've put more links to urban tree strategies around Australia on the Off Track website, and there's also a video which shows you what the trees in Bendigo actually look like. You can find it by going to abc.net.au/radionational and following the prompts. I'm Anne Jones, and it's been a pleasure taking you to the regional city of Bendigo this week. Next week, I'll take you somewhere else.